welcome everyone to episode 93 of High Tech on the Low. Adam, how are you this morning?
Every day is a blessing, man. How are you?
I am good. I am good. We're sitting here with Adam Salman, who's going to talk to us a little bit about the world of investments and Israeli growth and U.S. growth and all that fun stuff. And we're very excited to kind of learn more about what it is that you do and how you help the ecosystem. As always, we are sponsored by Front Team with 12 different communities and 6 verticals and 3,000 members all looking to connect. And as always, if you like what you hear, please send us a like, subscribe, follow, all that jazz. So, Adam, we're going to get really, just straight into this, because I really want to, kind of dive down to the value of this conversation, which is going to be a lot about the world of kind of, M&As, investments, business development, all that fun world. So I want you to kind of give us a brief introduction of yourself and what you're up to right now.
Absolutely. So I'm Adam Salman. I'm first and foremost an investor and an advisor to companies worldwide. I've been managing partner at Kukerman, Israel's largest private investment bank, for about 2.5 years now. I cover Canada, emerging markets, and food tech and ag tech, mainly for the investment bank. And then I'm also an advisor, so I have a background in merchant banking.
For sure. So that sounds like, a very wide background when it comes to the world of investments. How did you get into it?
It actually all started with the first investment I made in a Canadian cannabis company about 7 years ago, which was acquired by Aurora about 2 years after I made the private investment for $3.2 billion. Canadian dollars.
Nice. Okay, well, still good. We don't fault the Canadian dollars, but no, that's awesome.
Some call them dollarettes, but yes.
Dollarettes. I like that word. I like that. That's actually a good way to refer to it. I have some Canadian clients. Maybe I'll start doing that as well. I wanted to know, though, were you always an investor then, or was it something that kind of happenstance came about to your life? I'll invest in this company and see what happens.
So I was always bullish that the cannabis would be legalized, at least in Canada, and I think in more and more countries, as we're seeing recently, Thailand, etc. But the investment opportunity came because a friend of mine that we had all grown up with, like a group of my friends, was the CFO of the company. And other friends were basically the co-founders and the lead investors. So kind of that's how it came to me. And then that capital I had from a business I had been doing since I was 14. I exported 4 Hummers to Macau on Alibaba when I was 14, believe it or not. So
that's
where the capital came from.
Okay, interesting. But you were always in investments then, or what were you doing prior to that?
No, so at the time I was exporting brand new cars, and basically the opportunity came to be, and I saw that there's a lot of potential in the space and very high valuations for sister companies or other companies in the sector. So, we took a bet, as they say, and it went pretty well.
Nice. Yeah, it seems like it, especially if you got that many dollarettes in your pocket. So that's nice. Here the thing, becomes is, Kukerman, obviously, you guys are focused in investments, generally speaking. Now, with startups and the world of tech, where is, your kind of focus as a firm, and where is your focus also personally?
Great question. So first of all, the dollarettes did not come to me. That was the exit total.
Okay.
Secondly, I did well for my small investment, but it was definitely a way to get started. And then Kukerman basically is Israel's largest private investment bank. So about a team of around 50, I would say 8 or 9 global offices. And, each department kind of handles its own sector or geography, which is unique, because if you take other, larger banks in Israel that have investment banks, they'll probably have a smaller team and some of their folks will work on various sectors in the same day. For example, they can IPO a health tech company in the morning and a fintech company at night,
right?
Where that won't really happen with us. It's different departments.
Mm-hmm. So when you guys are, evaluating different investment opportunities, various, potentials, for growth, whatever it might be, what are you guys looking at? What is your ability in terms of evaluating them for, potential growth, potential success? How do you guys go about it?
So just to go back to your earlier question and also answer this one. So Kukerman has 2 operations. One is an investment bank that has various divisions that does what standard investment banks do, which is capital raising and M&A. And then Catalyst, which is a fund that is separate Chinese walled, and it invests in late stage Israeli companies. So as opportunities come in and as we meet founders or investors, depending on what matches them and, you know, how specific or how generic they want to be, and also whether they want, you know, the fund to control their capital, or do they want to invest on a one-by-one deal that the investment bank has.
Sure.
So it's kind of a very multifaceted answer. Happy to elaborate.
Well, I mean, I'd love for you to elaborate. At the end of the day, people here want to know kind of how, you know, you guys are thinking. You guys are the money, right? You guys are the source here. And so we want to know kind of, in a sense, what is it that you guys are looking for? You know, a lot of, for example, when you talk in the VC world, right? You know, a lot of VCs will say, oh, we're investing in the team. And then at some point, traction, maybe some point timing in the market, right? You know, things of that nature. Now, I'm sure you guys might have similar, you know, metrics, but what else are you looking at?
Okay, so again, very important to separate the different buckets. So I handle the investment banking and managing partner at the investment bank. I don't really deal with the day-to-day of the fund. So I'm not constantly deploying, you know, our capital. I will deploy my own, you know, in some deals. And then a lot of my friends that are pretty notable sometimes join. But again, it's up to them. And then depending on the opportunity and which bucket it could go to. So if I think that Catalyst can deploy capital into it, which means it's a late stage Israeli company, usually tech or at least Israel related, then, you know, I'll introduce it to either Eddie Kukerman or Yair Shamir, who leads the Catalyst funds. We have about four funds now. And then if it's an investment banking mandate, meaning they're looking to either raise, you know, 20 million, 30 million, sometimes as low as 10 or higher dollars, then we will help them raise that capital. Or if they're looking to do M&A and purchase, you know, companies that are either smaller than them or to be purchased by a larger company in the same sector, or one that, you know, would add value to their day-to-day business, then that's something that, you know, I can definitely help with either personally, or if it's a department I'm not, like, for example, health science, I work very closely with, or life science, sorry, I work very closely with Dr. Laurent Chop, who leads the life science part of the business. So a lot of mandates are naturally, you know, both ag tech and life science, because they help animal health, for example.
Sure.
So there we'll share, we'll partner up, and we'll basically target, you know, the most relevant and most strategic investors that could potentially open the most doors. Because I always say the best investment comes with an agreement, and that agreement should be much larger, and a commercial agreement that really forwards the trajectory of the company and makes that investor much better than, per se, a plumber into a fintech company.
Yeah, for sure. Now, you know, you mentioned also just now a few kind of areas right now, you know, health and life sciences, agriculture, things like that. What are some, you know, industries that, you know, you yourself, I'd also say Kukerman in general, are a little bit bullish on right now, especially considering, you know, that we're seeing a lot of movement in the markets. There's a lot of concerns right now going on as well, whether, you know, has funding dried up? Are certain markets, you know, poised to crumble with this, you know, incoming recession, not recession, who knows? So what are you guys a little bit bullish on?
So I think the firm is very active in life science, as I mentioned. So that's all aspects of what can, you know, benefit our lives, leveraging science. Mm-hmm. That's very wide, but I, you know, generally people think biotech, health tech, even pharmaceutical companies. And then we do a lot in the world of tech, like technology, fintech, deep tech, you know, with the fund being an early investor, Mobileye, Taboola, Tufin, and Arbit. And then us as an investment bank, you know, working with various clients that have very, I would say for me personally, and I think the bank tends to agree with me, but again, I'll let Eddie or Lear speak to that. for me, I think that it's about the companies that are more circular economy, more sustainability, impactful, you know. I think that if you're doing good, you'll make money, and doing good feels better, right? We all, you know, we all make money, 100%. And we've all felt good on a day where we have a win. But I think beyond capital, when we pass, which we all will, you know, it's what did you leave in this world, and how did you help impact this world? So I think that definitely leads us. And if we want to get deep in, like, two companies that I'm very active in now, they're both in that world, right? They're both improving people's lives or improving our planet and climate, and, you know, protein shortages, etc.
For sure. Like, what? Which companies are those? If I can ask, are they you know, kind of public for discussion?
Sure. Yeah, of course. They're both exclusive, so happy to talk about them. There are some non-exclusive companies where I'll just basically speak high level what they do, and would love for people to reach out or, you know, get deeper later post
Awesome.
NDA.
Yeah, for sure. We'll make sure everyone gets an NDA, all the viewers. No, I'm joking,
But yeah, the ones I can talk about, I'll talk about freely, and the ones I can't, I'll just do what every banker does, which is basically just give you the highlights.
Yeah, for sure.
Onto Protect is a company that I'm very, very bullish on, and I enjoy working alongside the very skilled management team. Really an honor to be with their CEO and CTO, and I just came back from San Francisco at the World AgTech Conference with them
Nice.
recently in the last couple of weeks. And what they do is they take black soldier flies, which, believe it
Okay.
or not, the larvae of a black soldier fly, and don't quote me on exact numbers here, guys, but close to it, in about seven, no, in about 10 to 12 days, they'll eat 7,000 times their size
Wow.
on any organic waste stream you put them on, believe it or not, even you and I, if we weren't alive, right? So,
Wow.
essentially, that has so many inputs, right? So, from breweries to food manufacturers to bioethanol facilities. So
Sure.
anyone that has an organic or ag waste stream generally is either paying money or, you know, doing something that's cumbersome, either on their cap table or on their green rating, right? Because they're either filling up a landfill or using a solution that's creating methane. So here, this solution comes in and says, we're going to use nature to turn what you don't want into what the world needs.
Interesting. I love how also they're kind of using, in a sense, what we would consider the most annoying bug, right? You know, a fly. Like, how many people, you know, think of a fly, the first thing you think of is like the thing buzzing around your head, right? Some annoying little bug. And in a sense, they're taking and they're saying, no, this annoying little bug can basically be the answer to our whole waste problem, especially when it comes to organic waste, right? I mean, that's amazing. And you guys are invested in it directly. Like, have you been with it? Is it one of those later stage companies from the Catalyst, or where is it right now in terms of your
So
investment
this
thesis?
company has raised about $14 million to date. Don't quote me again, I'd say 10 to 15. So it's definitely not early stage, but it's also not late stage. Usually Catalyst will get involved, you know, when there's 50 or 100 employees. Here, I'd say it's a team of about a dozen.
Okay.
So it's getting there, right?
Right.
And
A lot of
what we're
promise.
doing there is we're mandated exclusively to help them raise their current round,
Okay.
which is moving along very well, and there's a lot of traction on. And then also, like I said, I'm always chasing agreements rather than checks because I think that allows me to leverage my network and
Right.
our collective network in the best possible way, right? When you come to somebody saying, let's do business, let's make money, you come at eye level and you ask for a check, somewhat you have to put your head down. You know what I'm saying?
Right. Because you're, in a sense, you're kind of coming from more of a position of need as opposed to a position of let's both do well together.
Opportunity, exactly.
Right,
Now, don't get me
exactly.
wrong, deploying capital in great businesses is an opportunity. But bottom line is, when you need somebody's money or you want to make money with them, it's very different.
Right, 100%. 100. Now, you know, coming to that, I think is a really interesting discussion, right? You know, we in the tech world, right? We as founders, we as, you know, all these different types of, names that you want to give people in the tech world, right? Everyone's looking for money, right? Everyone's looking for money all the time. They're looking for investments. They're looking for angel investments. They're looking for VCs, corporate VCs, doesn't matter, but they're always looking for money. And you bring up this really interesting point of kind of like looking for agreements. Now, you know, obviously, you know, you're dealing with various types of companies at various stages, but what are like, you know, when you kind of look at a founder or you look at a founding team, what do you kind of evaluate when you're kind of saying, these guys don't really understand the need versus the agreement idea, right? You know, what are you looking at?
So essentially, I think that that leads to two answers because you said everybody's constantly chasing capital, which is true, right? All businesses need growth and they need fuel to grow. But there's the devil in the detail there, right? Because there are companies that are constantly raising money,
Right.
and then there are companies that are constantly gaining customers and call it raising EBITDA, let's say,
Okay.
right? They're going and looking to fuel on earnings rather than on, you know, future rounds and investment. And I think that that's an important approach. Now, don't get me wrong. There are businesses like Uber and businesses that, you know, require insane amount of capital to grow, and it makes sense. And, you know, for late stage deep pools of capital, that's a great direction and it works.
Right.
But then again, there's a lot of businesses that, you know, are constantly chasing the next million or $5 million, when with one agreement, one proper partnership, they can mm-hmm. get access to other people's either existing customers or become a new revenue stream for a business and receive those millions of dollars in the next 12 months, but as earnings rather than an investment that they owe equity on or debt on and, you know, is sitting on their books, right? In a right. negative light rather than
and even sitting the on their board light. In a certain sense, right? And to also exactly. help you make decisions, you know?
Exactly. Like customers, they pay you. They don't help you make decisions and they don't decide how your boat goes, right? They don't exactly. drive your boats per se. So I think that that's the first and foremost approach, right? Like we're always looking to work with the best quality businesses, whether it's as investors, as bankers, me as an advisor. It's the businesses that are chasing customers and growth rather than the next investment round. And again, unless it's the certain businesses that there's no other way, right? I don't think you could have bootstrapped Uber.
Yeah, no, for sure. I mean, at the end of the day, there's always a business, right, that in a sense needs the money. And I get what you're saying. It's just, you know, I think a lot of people, when they consider investment bankers or people like that, they assume it's all money all the time, right? They don't always assume that there's kind of this other world to it, which is something that you're kind of highlighting here, which is like there's a level of kind of, you know, what we might call kind of in a more traditional sense, business development. But it's really kind of like, you know, how do you find opportunities, whether they're agreements, partnerships, whatever you want to call them, that can, you know, kind of build the business as opposed to just say, here's a check, go cash it, get a few more employees. Now, one of the things too that I kind of want to, you know, ask you here too is the element of this, you know, at the end of the day, you know, you bring up the agreements, you bring up the investments. There's an element of, you know, financial return, obviously, that you guys have to be, you know, I wouldn't say subservient to, but you have to always have it at the back of your mind. How do you kind of balance that with also, you know, your ethical considerations, like you were talking about the circular economy, sustainability, things like that, that are really right now kind of at the forefront of not just like, you know, a business mindset, but also like the societal mindset, right? Of how to kind of live a better life, how to take care of our planet, how to take care of our societies better. How do you balance that?
I think in two words, social responsibility, right? It's not about only looking at returns or only hunting, you know, what's the greenest company out there. So, you know, we get brownie points. It's about a balance in the middle and saying, okay, you know, good businesses and high quality businesses are usually socially responsible and are usually focused on growth. And you can usually quantify their future cash flows, right? Because that's where you get the return from. Right. So we try to look at businesses that we understand and that we can say, okay, where, you know, where are they today? Where could they go? Why is there a gap from, you know, where they are today and where could they go? How could we help that gap?
Okay.
Right. And then help, it depends on who you ask, right? If you ask a fund, usually it'll be a large check and a couple intro emails and that's the help, right?
Right.
And then if you ask a banker, usually if you have the capital or if you're a healthy enough company that you can, you know, acquire companies with all stock M&A, which today is more possible than ever, then they'll say, okay, let us go hunt companies for you or let us hunt capital for you. And that's their help. Mm-hmm. And then if you ask, I think a good advisor, a good merchant banker, then they'll say, look, companies need much more than capital to grow and M&A. They need talent. They need new revenue streams. Mm-hmm. They need go-to-market strategy. Right. They need influence from a board level, right? And also non from board level, right? Like,
right.
For example, if you have a startup that has a biodegradable, call it diaper, right?
Okay.
If on your board is Jessica Alba, well, chances are that business will do better and have more, you know, virality or at the very least credibility, right?
Right. Or at least a lot more market share, market, you know, exposure in that sense. Sure.
Yeah. So I like to roll up my sleeves and help wherever I can and leverage an eclectic network, right? That can essentially, to answer your question, is you got to look at the business and say, who should this business speak to at a high C or chair level, you know, that can forward the trajectory of the business. So I'd call it like pre-M&A, right? Because if they can do a transaction or conclude a transaction that will improve both of their trajectories and would be a win-win, then chances are in the future, one of them may want to buy each other, right? So it's like, who should be talking that isn't? And then how could I bring that discussion further faster?
Right. And I think that's like a good point kind of that you bring up there too, because at the end of the day, this is kind of like, you know, you're looking at the long run, right? You know, you're looking at the pre-M&A so that you can get to the M&A. And I think that's also something to also, you know, that founders and teams and things like that also need to keep in mind is that, you know, the goal cannot every time just be to the next thing. It needs to be what's your long-term, you know, kind of view. And with that, I also kind of want to ask you, you know, we're getting towards the end of the discussion here. And I always like to ask, you know, kind of people, especially founders, you know, what's their advice for other founders? But you, I kind of want to ask from a different perspective, you know, you've obviously sat in a lot of meetings and a lot of investment, you know, presentations, whatever it's been, you know, what's your advice, you know, for up and coming entrepreneurs, you know, for founders, even people who are already in it and already in their startups and are looking for that next opportunity, you know, what's your main piece of advice for them? And it can be from a perspective of, you know, how they should consider themselves to, you know, kind of like, you know, what you are telling them to look for when they're going to the cap table, for example.
Yeah, so I think a little bit of what we've discussed, and it's funny that you say all that, because at the beginning you said that pre-M&A leads to the M&A, and it's funny because I won't get into too many details because I want to answer this question and we don't have time, but another company I advise, I managed to secure, you know, the top strategic in their field, meaning the most credible and most powerful brand in their sector, to do an exclusive deal with them where they purchase a new revenue stream product from them and put their name on each product, kind of like powered by. And that deal did well, and that deal gave credibility to the company. And then recently, about 6 months ago, the founder called me and said he wants to potentially do M&A and sell the entire company. And recently, we just received an LOI for that from a very strategic person, not the same person that did the other deal, but probably one of the most strategic acquirers for this business. So you're absolutely right. And then to answer your question, what I would tell any founder, I'll go back to what I alluded to previously, is focus on earnings and focus on partnerships and focus on folks that can open the door for you. If you have the privilege to choose which capital you take, even if it's at a lower valuation, take the one that can open many doors. And I'll give you an exact example. If you have your friends that are willing to give you, you know, a million at 10, but a very smart, gentleman or lady that's very well connected said, let me give you a million at 4, and it's your startup and, you know, you're at seed sentence stage, or even if you're starting to build your product or your technology, I would go to the gentleman at 4 or the group, and I would say, look, I have somebody that's willing to pay me 2.5x what you are. I understand your value, but I want to validate and guarantee I receive it. Right. I'll take this crazy price cut so long as you guarantee me, you know, 3 valuable intros per quarter or something along those lines. I'm happy to strategize offline when we have more time with, you know, anyone I believe in and I have conviction around that I think I can help. But essentially, focus on who can open future doors and focus on partnerships that can make money, and learn something from Moshe Aviv, who built the tallest tower in Tel Aviv Ramat Gan. You know, he did that as a cooperative purchase. So share with the right people rather than raise and then pay them or hire. I hope that's a good answer.
I like that. I think that was the best way to end this episode. Listen, Adam, it's been fascinating connecting with you and talking to you about the world of investment banking. It's not something we get to do often on this podcast, so I'm very happy we're able to do it. And just thank you so much for your time. I really appreciate it.
Thank you. And don't forget to go for Israel, our conference on May 3rd with 500 plus international investors and world leaders that have spoken there, as well as Fortune 50 CEOs.
Amazing. And we will also be there talking with some of the founders. So that'll be exciting. Thank you so much. Great. Adam.
Speak soon.